Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Welcome back for the seventh episode of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Chris Chavez joined once again by Alex Lohr and Mitch Kastoff. Matt here in the Big Apple after taking in the Milrose games. And we're going to talk Milrose games. We're going to talk action out in Seattle. Afterwards, we'll hit on Mo Farah opening up with a half marathon, Usain Bolt retirement rumors, what we make out of that. Maybe even hit on, talk a little bit about the gutsiest finish you'll ever see in a marathon that took place in Austin. But starting off, big thing of the weekend, Wanamaker Mile, where 10 of the 13 guys go under 4. Bernard Lagat rewrites another Masters record. Father Time is not catching him anytime soon. And Matt Sentrowitz holds off Nick Willis in the very last lap of that race. Really awesome finish. Shannon Roebury shot at the American record, ends up really going, her legs turned to jello at the very end of the race, but held on for the win, 4:24, I believe it was. But I think the most exciting part of the Milrose games that pretty much left everyone speechless, Ashton Eaton going over that railing. When you guys watched that, maybe Alex, you caught it in a GIF afterwards or something, maybe you saw the news on Twitter. I know Mitch saw it live. What were your initial thoughts? Because I was absolutely... The place went silent. No one knew what was going to happen.
When I first saw that, I had two reactions. One, only the greatest athlete in the world cannot get hurt in that situation. And two, Alik Harris won the race. So I'm just saying, Ashton didn't win the race. Alik Harris did. And anybody else who would have done that probably would have been hurt very, very badly.
He landed on his 2 feet. That's the report. There's no one who can confirm that because he was the only one back there the entire time. But he popped out right after the race, smiling, and then went right to the jumps. Mitch, your tweet was awesome.
Yeah, I try. I used to sleep at the Armory, and I know exactly how far that fall is, and it's really far. So, for reference, I jumped over a fence 2 weeks ago and twisted my ankle and had to put some frozen peas on it. So for a man to fall 15 feet, first of all, he's going backwards, lands on his feet, and I'm happy that there was no one there to capture it because I want him, I would prefer if he said, like, I did a 540, you know, somersault, McNair twist, landed on my feet. He pops right out. I don't know who's in marketing here, but this should be some kind of big... This story should continue forever. The legend of Ashton Eaton just continues to grow.
I, too, used to play 1080 on 64, Mitch.
Other races to note from Milrose Games. It was a crazy finish between Eric Sawinski and Robbie Andrews in that 1K. Really, actually, happy to see Robbie Andrews looking in shape right now. So it looks like that move to Vig is working. Whatever's going on there might be the man bun. But Robbie Andrews is fit, and it's good to see. Moving on from that race, Sonny Richards-Ross won race on the track. Didn't really get the win, but it was cool to see her there. Beyonce was playing during her race. Shout out to the Armory DJ who did a great job as that was going on, and then also playing DJ Unks Walk It Out during the race walk. So... it was a really good party out on 168th Street. It's pretty much where the all-star performances were for the weekend. not really at the Barclays Center last night. So Melrose games, all in all, lots of fun. Great show put on. Great fields assembled by David Monty once again. So, yeah. Guys, the mile was awesome. I was actually, my initial prediction was Nick Willis, so I'm happy with that, how that turned out. I mean, maybe not the win. What were your guys' thoughts on anything that's really surprised you about who looked good, who didn't really look fit, or what was your initial take on that whole race?
My initial take was Centro was on a mission from the gun. We saw him latch onto Wazorik like right away, like on his heels. So I don't know what the goal was, if he was going after, you know, American or world record here. But I know Centro is very aware of how fit he is. Nick also incredibly fit. You know, we saw that workout that went up with him and Will on Wednesday, which was crazy impressive. He sat back a little bit, and so I was really impressed with how he, you know, niched his way through. I mean, he was gapped quite a bit there after the first like 600 meters or so, made his way back up. But my goodness, those two are in crazy, crazy good shape. Centro used to be really smooth, and we knew he was really good, but I didn't know if he was – I've never seen him so empowered just going after big records like that. So I think he's probably as good as he's ever been. He might have his best year ever, and I would probably say the same for Willis.
And I was standing next to Ricky, and, I mean, there will be more of this week when I write about it a little bit. Ricky – was talking about how he's really Centro's out to make up for last year, where last year was the year where everyone was supposed to go after those records, and he was sick, so he missed out on that whole entire opportunity. So if you watch the last couple years, how Centro was able to hold on to it's the Olympics and the World Championships, well, maybe not the Olympics, but he's there with one lap to go at all these things, and he's really, really close, especially with Kiprop as well. He finds a way to latch onto him. This might be the year where, I mean, who knows who toes the line in Beijing, but Centro, and it's really early, but Centro's fit, and you can't count him out in a World Championship year. If the math is right, he's going to be there for gold this year. But Mitch, your take.
You've covered the big two. The only way these two guys know how to do things is the most exciting way. So hats off to them. I wish I was there. I know it gets loud in that sweaty, kind of smelly place in Spanish Harlem. Shout out to Pat Casey, always in the mix. Wanted a participation medal because he participated really well. And, of course, Iago with the headline from the New York Times. Bernard Lagat, 40 years young, turning back the clock, cranking up the speed. 354.91. Dude is just timeless. And I gotta give a shout out to everyone's favorite homeboy, Evan Jaeger. Got fifth in a mile where he used to be a miler. Then he ran the 5K, and that was steeplechaser. But he took a lot of miler scalps out of there.
Yeah, I didn't. So, I agree, Mitch. I did not think that he would be in the mix that much towards the end of that race. I thought he'd get kicked out the back and towards the end of that race, but he stepped up. He definitely stepped up to the competition.
And for the most part, it was weird to see. You know, you mentioned how Centro latched onto Wazorik right from the start, but what some people may not have noticed on that broadcast is the guy leading that chase pack was Ed Cheserek. So Cheserek was also kind of in that mix. He ended up getting the school record for Oregon. Maybe not the NCAA collegiate record, but he was there. He was up in front leading guys like Leo and Lear for a while, and then eventually it took a toll on him. But he still, I mean, ended up breaking four, setting a school record. It's a little deceiving to say Ed Cheserek never broke four coming into this race, because we saw it in a leg of a DMR last year. Obviously, it doesn't count for, you know, his personal best, but yeah, hats off to Edward Cheserek also in there rubbing shoulders, and afterwards just cooling off with Bernard Lagat. It was kind of a nice glimpse of, you know, some talent, future and, you know, current talent. So that was really cool. Yeah. Any other on the women's race, what was anything surprising to you guys? For me, I think it was, you know, we, over the last few shows, we made a deal about Mary Kane maybe not looking as great, and she was fourth for some of the race and then kind of also fell off towards the back. So Jordan Hesse is in really good shape right now. But Mary Kane, I'm not entirely sure what's going on in practice out there, but she doesn't look to be as sharp as she was about a year ago. And we'll see what that translates into during outdoor season.
She looked like one of those Russian nesting dolls that I used to have, just kind of wobbling. And I thought she was going to go down and get passed by Trenier, who's having a great season. But props to Roberry for going for it. She said she had some kind of lactic acid attack going on. But no American record, no big deal. She knows she's money. My props is for the second week in a row. I have to give it to NJNY, Steph Charnigo. She third in a race. Again, a lot of scalps she took. Props to her.
Shannon Roberry, awesome shape right now. I think I mentioned it earlier. Did a treadmill workout afterwards. She actually did mention that she was a little disappointed that she didn't get the American record. I think they went through the half faster than they did during Camel City. Maybe that contributed to her legs being a little bit tired towards the end. But Shannon Roberry, as fit as ever. Al, from what you've noticed from Shannon Roberry over the last couple of years, I mean, when you see her now, how would you compare that to when she was, you know, in bronze medal shape a couple years back?
I would say it's similar, actually. Right now, if we look at her bronze medal shape to right now, it is very similar. She even looks like a little more dialed in on the line to, like, and I don't know what she's changed, but she seems, I used the word empowered with Centro earlier. I would say the same for her. She even looks a little just more dialed in when she's waiting there on the line. So, I think Shannon, you run 422 on a flat track in January. I mean, who knows where the season can go from there.
Don't you just wish we could see Shannon Roberry versus Jenny Simpson right now on the track?
I would love to see that. I saw Jenny this weekend, but she was not on the track. She was a coach she was doing coaching duties for Colorado.
I saw that, and Coburn was doing that too as well.
Yes.
So I guess that covers the two big races at Millrose. I mean, we have to give a little bit of props because we saw a world record go down at Millrose, and world record once again in quotations. Bryson Spratling is the 500-meter indoor world record holder. Really funny story is afterwards, at the after party at Coogan's, Knox Robinson is out there signing autographs because people think that he is Bryson Spratling. And he comes up to me, he's like, I was just signing a bunch of kids' shirts, and they all think I'm 500-meter world record holder Bryson Spratling. So Knox Robinson is out there lowering the value of some T-shirts. For all you guys who don't know who Knox Robinson is and you're listening to this, Google Knox Robinson and then Google Bryson Spratling, and you'll see the comparison between the two.
quick shout. He did once... I will say this. I didn't really recognize him. He usually has... his hair game is usually a little crazy more hair on point. And one time, he actually called out Alex and said that he always talks about his hair. So, never forget.
If you want to see the best moment of Bryson Spratling's career, go to Raleigh Relays 4x8. And it's one of those, like, Courtney Okolo type. There is no way he's going to win this race. I swear to God, if Bryson Spratling wins this race, I will lose my mind. And he does exactly that. There's a lot of screaming involved. Anyways,
moving on. Al, you mentioned seeing Jenny Simpson out there at Seattle.
Yep.
What else was good out there?
There was, it was hard to keep track of all the crazy collegiate action this weekend. I was lucky enough to be at Husky, which, you know, is just traditionally, you know, just absolutely packed full of great events. I think a performance that got kind of swept under the rug is Bailey. You know, he's running 6.5. He's, you know, tied for second in the world this year. In races there, he's basically just racing against his teammate. Bailey is, dude, remember, I mean, do you guys remember London 4x4 or 4x1? He was going toe-to-toe with Bolt for about 50 meters there. He looks like he's in top form again. Good to see him back. But I think the other two stories that we have to talk about, I'm going to focus on some NCAA-ness right now, is Mr. Christian Soratos, the guy that one dude who was from Montana State and the altitude converted time was number one still coming into this week because he had the altitude converted time. We're all like, hey, is this really like legit? It's like a 6-second conversion because Bozeman's at like 7,500 feet and he ran on like a wood 200-meter track. The guy comes down and he throws down 3:55.27, takes down some big names. And let me tell you guys, he was out early. I mean, he was unabashed, unafraid. He was taking the pace. Once the rabbit came off, he went straight to the front, held on to the lead, and then Brandon Kidder was on his shoulder. Let Brandon Kidder take them through, you know, the last couple hundred meters, swung wide, and outkicked Brandon Kidder. So the question is Christian Soratos legit? Yes, he is. Little raw. When you look at him, he's not super smooth looking, but the dude's got serious strength, serious wheels. He's the new embodiment of Pat Casey, you know, coming down from altitude. And it was interesting to see him win that race. And right next to us was Anthony Rotich of UTEP watching on. So, man, you know, Christian Soratos, I'm going to say legit contender. It will be interesting to see if he can get through the rounds at NCAAs. You know, that's the big thing. But any more doubt surrounding him, that needs to go away. Christian Soratos, 3:55, number one miler in the country. On the women's side, the big story. The 3K comes down, and oh my gosh, you guys. Dominique Scott. The last time I remember her racing so vividly in indoors last year, and I thought she was just so aggressive and just unafraid to mix it up. And then I maybe overestimated her come cross country time, but she destroyed everyone in the 3K. I mean, didn't look back. I mean, there was a lot of pros in that race, and she did not care. She was all business. She ran 8:52.57. That's fast. That's faster than anyone else in the country so far. So look out for that Razorback, and she's going to be on her home turf come NCAAs.
Now there's a name that we kind of know. Jenny Barringer ran around that time, I think 8:53 on that track a few years back. So Dominique Scott, that's pretty good. She took some, again, like you said, she took the names, beat some Brooks Beasts, beat some big NCAA cross country, I guess, top teners. I'm not even sure how to, all Americans, I guess, is the technical term.
Yeah, Cranny was in that race. Coogan was in that race. I mean, she held off Bree Fellnagel late charge. It was really impressive.
Here's one thing, again, one quick fun fact. I don't remember who interviewed her last year, but it was before Commonwealth, and someone asked her, because she's from South Africa originally, and they asked, oh, are you going to run Commonwealth Games? And she said, I don't really know. She was pushing for American citizenship, and my favorite bomb that I don't know if anyone ever watched, so if she or this person is listening, I apologize, but she said that if my boyfriend proposes to me sometime soon, then she can become an American citizen. So,
wow.
Who knows, Dominique, maybe you'll be running for the USA soon. Don't want to put any pressure on you, anonymous guy, but hey, good luck with that.
Another, I guess, star power that was out there on the West Coast, Nick Simmons in a 3K. How'd that end up going?
Well, it went. He hung on. He went straight to the back. You know, we haven't seen Nick on the track in a long time. I don't know. There was a lot of ridiculous, you know, is he going to run over, you know, over under 8? I don't know why you would think he would run under 8 right now, especially after never seeing him on the track in a long year. I think he ran, you know, low 8:20s-ish, which, you know, he's still coming back. He got done. He didn't seem to be, you know, he hated it, I think. So, you know, he's still very much in the building base phase, and he hates indoor track. I think he got out of it what he was hoping to.
Mitch, you might be the guy, I know you used to be the guy who followed on with everything else that was going on around the country. What else have we missed from results?
Oof. I used to be that guy. I might be a little diluted now, but written on my quick notepad, the Canadian sensation, who's not Cam Levins, Brennan McBride out Spire, 146.80. What can I say? He's the real deal. He's always been the real deal. The guy, him and Centro, I feel like they're never breathing when they run. They never look like they're straining at all, and I wish I had an ounce of that skill. But then you got a guy like Edward Kemboy at his home track, Iowa State, 146.09, held off a bunch of, you know, a guy like Andres Arroyo. I haven't talked about him a while since he blew up senior year. What else happened? Oh,
BU Valentine had like 8 sub fours.
Yeah, Georgetown, all of their people, including their women's team and their alumni, all went sub four. That is just, I think two were juniors, two were sophomores. I have to bring it up, but they all return next year, which is kind of insane. Hopefully they go to Penn, get that wheel.
Fort Palmer running 3:56 out at BU, so he won that mile. Rocking a beard, new Hoka kit. Actually, it's really fun to see all the Hoka athletes now have those spikes. So it's really cool. New gear that we're seeing out on the track, and now we're starting to see Hoka be a player on the track, as well as Under Armour had a big event in New York this week, just with the whole NBA All-Star Weekend, and Manio Mitchell. Was in a commercial with Jamie Foxx. I thought that was pretty cool. So just hinting at some new players when it comes to track. What else happened? I'll award my champion of the weekend to, if we all want to pick one person, I'll go with Florence Kiplagat setting the world half marathon record. Ross Tucker had some interesting tweets. I'll pull those up right now. But I'll go through her splits real quick. After she broke her own record, first of all. Last year, she went through the 5K in 15:50. This year, 15:38. 10K, 31:09. This year, 31:01. 15K, 46:36. This year, 46:13. 20K, 61:56. This year, 61:53. And then the half ended up 65:12 last year. This year, 65:09. So dropping 3 seconds off her personal best. And I think Ross Tucker said something on Twitter that she needs a few more people to run at that level in order for her to finally get to challenging Paula Radcliffe's world record, because right now she'd probably be number one in the world. And Paula's record is still so far up there. Mary Keitany has come not really that close. It's 2:15, and then everyone else 2:17, 2:18. That's the fastest we've seen in a while. So Ross Tucker's tweet said, so Florence Kiplagat ran 65:09 half marathon today, 3 second improvement on her world record. So not radically different, but think 30:50 for 10K doubled. And 65:09 means the half marathon world record now projects something near Paula's untouchable marathon world record. And like I said, more women need to get there first, and then they can try and make an assault on Paula's record. So, yeah, Florence Kiplagat in a league of her own right now, and it'll be very interesting to see her out in London. Guys, if you had to award a champion of the weekend, who would it be?
Well, I mentioned earlier, I think Ryan Bailey doesn't get a ton of attention, I mentioned all those sub fours at BU. Colleen Quigley ran 4:29. It's pretty good. And if you watch the race, she pretty much ran the show herself. She's got good mile wheels, obviously. We saw her run, you know, she was second at Steeplechase a couple years ago, wheeling in Emma Coburn in the last 100 meters or so. She was banged up, I think, all of last year. Very interesting. 4:29 is no joke all by herself, for sure. So maybe not the most impressive, maybe not the champion of the weekend, but not to be forgotten.
So I'm going to run down a few things that we did miss in that 3K at Husky. I will say, hey, Kamoy Campbell, it's good to see you again, man. You know.
Arkansas boys are rolling.
Kicked out Garrett Heath, who's, I don't know, man. It's really good. But I will say a guy who finished behind them, I'm blanking off what place, maybe third or fourth. Because I don't even know who he is. Corey Gilbert, a Washington Frosch, ran 7:49. I have no idea who you are, dude.
Right.
You finished 195th at NCAAXC. That's really far back. And then I have to give some love to our boy. I keep saying he's our boy, but we got a lot of boys. Ricky Rockford, Eric Jenkins almost breaks Rupp's American 3K collegiate indoor record. That's a mouthful to say, but superlatives notwithstanding. We know you're legit. We know you're fast. There's also a Wisconsin Frosch. Morgan McDonald ran 7:55. I also have no idea who you are, but
he's an Australian. I think he ran a World Juniors in the steeplechase, I think, and I think he's an Australian kid.
But all of that, I guess Pierce Murphy taking down Rotich, he's good, so it's not really up there for me. But I will give it to this guy. He crushes everyone else. John Troutman. 46 years young, 4:12:33. I know we're looking at Legat, 40 years old, running 3:54. But John Troutman, I just bow to you. I thought you were a mere mortal. You've lost 60 pounds, and now you're running 4:12. Congratulations. I hope to be alive at 46.
I have to throw in one last thing, guys. You mentioned Edward Cheserek getting the school record in the mile. Little do you guys know that he broke a just barely newly minted school mile because his teammate Daniel Wynn ran 3:57 at the Husky Invite, which somehow is the Oregon school record. Mac Fleet had it, and Wynn broke it at Husky, but then like literally minutes later, Cheserek broke it. But now Daniel Wynn can say he is a former school record holder. So his record, although his record stood for about 25 minutes.
I'll throw in one last
note
as well.
I'm surprised at the school record at Oregon. I mean, it's kind of weak until now.
I'll throw in one last note. Milrose, I mean, we all make a big deal about how loud it gets when Mary Kane is running or whenever they announce Shawnee Richards Ross. But the loudest I think it got the entire night was when Mikey Brannigan took that high school mile field, led it into the final bell lap. I think just after the Sports Illustrated article, which is out there, and it's a great read, and everything surrounding Mikey Brannigan and his situation, that place was rocking, and I think everyone, even there was some media behind me as well, might have been Sports Illustrated, really rooting for Mikey Brannigan in that last lap. And he coming down to final stretch, he didn't really have the wheels to hold off the rest of the guys, but it was a really powerful moment. I think we're going to see some really cool stuff from him in the next coming years. I know he has the invite to train at the Olympic Training Center for the Paralympic Games. And a really cool note from that article was that if you take his mile time and apply it to the Paralympic Games, Mikey Brannigan would possibly be a gold medalist at those games. So he's really, if you haven't read that article, be sure to go out, give it a read, and then go ahead and watch the race from this week in the high school boys mile, because it was some cool stuff. And I think just the goosebumps, you might have had to have been there to experience it, but that was a really cool moment from the weekend. Moving on, now that we've awarded and given props to pretty much everyone that we kind of encountered, there was some news earlier in the week that Mo Farah will be opening up his season with a half marathon up at Lisbon, I think it is, where some fast times are dropped year in and year out. There's actually a 100,000 euro reward if they break the world record, I think. And it's it's pretty cool. And it, you sometimes think about it. It's like, yeah, last year Mo was training for a marathon. And so a half marathon in New York was just, you know, part of the process to lead up to it. This is interesting because I didn't realize it until the last going through his history. He opens up pretty much every year with a half marathon, and it's just an interesting mix of speed and I guess competition. So I just found it weird. What do you guys make out of Mo Farah opening up with a half marathon?
I don't hate it. Well, I remember when they had a good him and Rupp had good days in New York a couple years ago. I think, you know, Mo, like there was some falls in the middle of it though, but I've seen a lot of action from, I think Mo's been training a lot down in Africa, getting back into his roots a little bit. I think it's a good move. The marathon was maybe too much, and maybe it was the context around the marathon that really got, you know, it was really, really built up. Will they break the world record? I mean, Chris, what did you say the prize money was? €100,000?
I think so. That's. I was reading a article in Portuguese, I think it was, and that was the translation I got.
Well, that is a boatload of money, like a crazy amount of money. I think it's, let's see, it's $114,000. So yeah, I bet they're gonna go for it. Lisbon throws. It's one of those like kind of smaller races that throws a lot of money at people and tries to, you know, get them to. They want that headline. Lisbon Marathon, you know, Lisbon Marathon equals world record. Will they get it? I don't know. I would be surprised if Mo goes for a world record at this time of the year, just because he hasn't been on fire lately.
I will say that I'm not mad at it. I'm fine with him running a half. And we're saying that he, world record, don't worry about it. When we're talking about him getting the win, there are five guys who have run sub 1 hour. And as we know, according to my calculations, that's pretty fast. So will he win? Maybe. But I want to see if he even decides. I mean, he's got to dip back down to that 5K range sometime soon. And then the real debate will start talking about whether that's going to be his event from now on, or if he's going to be a permanent move up, or have a permanent move up.
And I, you know, it was interesting to see that article about him opening up out in Lisbon, because I was talking to Centro and I think he mentioned something about Birmingham. So I don't know if we'll see him this weekend, see Mo this weekend. I don't know. We might see him in the half. We might see him this weekend. We'll see. But Mo Farah should be back in action pretty soon. He was out in Ethiopia for a good chunk of training. His Instagram is pretty cool with Abdi, so those two hanging out must be a laugh. Other news from this weekend, Usain Bolt, according to the Daily Mail, I believe it is, who got the scoop, or the Telegraph, one of those UK papers, tells him that he might just run the 100 in 2017 and then retire. But he also told Nick Zaccardi earlier in the week that if he lost in a world championship, he might not retire, like, in 2017, because, you know, champions don't go out that way. He probably wants to go out on top. So if 2017 doesn't go right, we might see him the next world championship cycle after that, which would be – it'd be very interesting to see what happens with that. And if Gatlin is still on fire 2 years from now, and he might be the guy to challenge it, or there's a surprise newcomer. But, you know, I've kind of had it with Usain Bolt retirement rumors. It's not going to be something to follow up until next year. And maybe the 2016, you know how we had the Derek Jeter farewell tour, 2016 Diamond League, 2017 Diamond League. I think that's where we'll see the tributes start to happen along the Diamond League for Usain Bolt. But, you know, I'm not making too much out of this whole entire story. What's your guys' take on this?
Well, I don't know what Usain Bolt's contracts look like. You have to remember that you know when you go into, you know, bargaining positions, you don't want to limit yourself to I'm going to be done here. That just kind of, you know, you lose a lot of power in bargaining talks when you limit yourself like that. So I'm sure Ricky probably told him not to say any absolutes ever. which is an ironic thing to say, but no absolutes.
You saying, I don't care when you retire. I hope it's never, and I hope you just get back to the track and run fast and beat everyone who doesn't deserve to beat you, because that's no one. But, Chris, I will say this. Daily Mail, man, I don't know if you follow your European soccer transfer rumors, but I hope no one from Europe is listening to this. The daily, like, picture New York Times, Daily News, that's kind of the standard of the British papers, and they are, man, I saved a few, I read a bunch, they are a tabloid heaven. So Usain, just do, I thought you were on like 400, now you're just running the 100. Hey man, you just do you, get back on the track, run really fast, never retire.
That kind of does, it was kind of a slow week in terms of news building up to just Milrose. There's a bunch of previews, everyone talking about what was going down this weekend, where all the hype was at. Lots of stuff in New York, including for All-Star weekend in terms of with the NBA. I think something we need to talk about is Kanye West rocking the Adidas Boost. But real quick, Alex, give us a little bit of a breakdown of is there actually Boost foam in Kanye's shoe?
I've never held it. But I will tell you that Boost is the future and expected to be on all of our shoes. So I've never held it in my hand. I'm going to assume it does. Yeah, it's a very high-end shoe. So I'm going to assume that there is Boost foam in that baby. If you have my personal contact information, the answer is no. I cannot get you one. Okay? So let's just establish that. Unless you are certain people we can move mountains for. But no, I mean, it was kind of fun around the office this week. I mean, you know, we have an apparel contract with the NBA, so we had a lot of brand activations this weekend in New York City. And, you know, I know Nike did that, the shoebox building, and that was cool too. And it's just cool to see like everybody kind of agree to set one weekend as like, you know, the kind of iconic, let's really embrace this cool, very American thing. And the All-Star weekend, you know, we had the Yeezy Boost and you know, Kanye had his kind of like artsy release. And then that picture got tweeted out of him rocking the Ultra Boost. That was cool. We had a new like Superstars, and we had all these different kind of New York themed original releases. So, yeah, it was a blast to see that from maybe not a just like a purely basketball standpoint. There's more of a culture reference around the weekend.
Can we all agree here that the three of us easily would beat Kanye in a 5K? I think it goes without saying.
I'm 1,000% positive I could do that.
Mitch?
I shouldn't say 1,000%. I think the question should be who would win in a race, Beck or Kanye?
Ooh. I take Beck.
I take Beyonce.
I don't know.
So...
Beyonce wins it all. Mitch, what are your thoughts on Kanye rocking Adidas Boosts? I mean, does he obviously you love your own sneaker game. Who's got the better sneaker game?
I don't know, man. Not to throw any shade anywhere, but he brought the Yeezys from Nike to Adidas. But he left the swag behind. I even saw some pictures of the zippers breaking already, so the jig's up. I'll keep my Yeezys Red Octobers. You guys, hey man. Respect for the big artistry.
Alright, but if we look at that photo of Kanye with the Ultras, he's a bad heel striker. But he's walking, so we can't give him too much crap.
Oh, Jesus. 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 No, I won't. I will not dissect Kanye West.
Yeah, I'm going to stay away from that with a really long pole.
All right. And I guess we'll close it off on this note. Austin Marathon happened. I guess, is the Austin Marathon, you guys were in Austin the last couple of years, is the Austin Marathon kind of like the signal that the marathon season is finally getting going?
you know, I you'd have to ask some of the other road race scene. It's a really good event, and it's grown a lot. It's not easy. Austin is hilly. People forget about that. Austin's really hilly. Ask Lance Armstrong. He dropped out in the middle of the race and, like, had his crew pick him up. It's rough, and if you watch the video that you're about to talk about, you'll see how truly much of a grind it can be. And today, I heard it got, like, the humidity was so bad, it felt more like 90. So, you know, it is not a cakewalk.
So the video that we're talking about, in case you haven't noticed, it's a local Austin TV affiliate. Hat tip to House of Run for tweeting it out. A elite Kenyan runner breaks down, probably because of the humidity and the hills, with 50 meters left to go in the race. And she crawls on all fours to the very finish line. Mitch, what's the gutsiest finish you've ever seen to a marathon?
Might be that. I just watched it before we started talking about it. And it is so... I bet the 50 meters she crawled is equivalent to me running 8,000 miles. Because it just seemed like... I even fast-forward like 2 minutes into the video. She was still crawling. And she's just got, like, this spit coming out, and she's got her eyes really wide. And I know I'm the kind of person who I would never drop out of a race, so I would probably just ask someone to put me down at that point.
Al? I don't think of the marathon. I mean, I think it was in Rotterdam a few years ago that the guy was, like, grabbing onto the fencing as he was trying to finish. But when I think of, like, brutal finishes, I just think of the corpses that lie on the ground in Terre Haute at the end of NCAA, like the women's race. I mean, it is literally, it is corpses, just lifeless corpses, just being picked up by the giant Indiana State football players who volunteer at the end. So if you ever get a chance to look over that little fence at Terre Haute, do it, and you'll see pure unabashed exhaustion.
Yeah, I think this marathoner beats Meb's finish in New York. I mean, there was a lot of hype around Meb not even wanting to start that, not even having it. He shouldn't have started that race in New York. And then, you know, crossing the finish line, holding hands with the other elite runner. I think this was a little bit gutsier towards the very finish. Because this woman was on all fours. Everything was left on that pavement. And, yeah, major props to her. I hope she was able to get, like, a Boston qualifier or something like that. I mean, being an elite Kenyan runner, she must have been up there and had a good cushion to finish something. But someone should extend an invite to her to go out there and throw down another fast time somewhere where the conditions might be better, maybe in the fall or later on. But that video, I think, needs to go viral, and a little bit more attention needs to be given to that. I think that kind of does it. There should be that's kind of all the action that took place this weekend, kind of all over the place. Iowa State, UW, New York, everywhere, out in the half marathon world record, kind of touch bases on everything. So... there's a couple news stories that might happen this weekend. Looking up at ahead at the schedule. Oh, yeah. Funny you mentioned that. I've got the Kenyan team right here. So I'm going to run down these names, and you guys tell me if you've heard of them before, because I think that'll give us a little bit of an idea of how many unknowns we have to figure out between now and then. So I'll go through this, and you count them off and let me know if you've heard them before. I'm going to just give you the top 10. Bedin Karoki, Jeffrey Kipsang, Leonard Barsodin, Moses Mokono, Philip Legat, Joseph Kiptum, Joseph Chacha, James Gitahi, Emmanuel Ngudi, Titus Mbeshi, Emmanuel Ruto. How many of those guys do you guys know?
Man, I would say I've heard three of those
Mitch?
Names. I've heard three of those names.
No idea.
But here's my thing. I don't know if that's going to matter. I mean, you know, it's been proven to us that that doesn't really matter. Last year, I think it played into the U.S.'s hands that the Polish course was so tough. You know, it was muddy. It was hilly. It was really gritty. I don't know what the course is going to be like this year. Will it matter? I don't know, because the team that the U.S. has is very strong, and I think they would benefit if the course was really muddy. But I don't know if it will be. And will, I mean, Kenya just throw down a bunch of 330 guys that we don't know about? I don't know. They could definitely do it. They seem to do it every year.
And it's I think a little part of it, just being how tough it was to find those results compared to how easy it is to find the U.S. cross results, and how I think Kenyan athletes might be able to do their homework a little better than U.S. athletes. That I feel like the U.S. kind of shows its hand a little bit more when it comes to world cross and going into, you know, the team is assembled, and they assembled it pretty early. Kenyans know who's going to be competing out there. It's a little bit reversed, where the U.S. might not know as much about these guys. But then again, you do mention the factor that the course plays. But, yeah, so that kind of reminds me. There's a fast race going out in Ireland that Sawinski and I think a few other guys might be headed out to. And then Birmingham will also be interesting to follow as well. Legat might be running out there and might be chasing a record. I don't want to set that in stone. But I know Larry Eater mentioned that he was going to go out there, and if something big might happen, and it once Legat races. So just things to keep tab on, and we'll get you all caught up on that action next week on the Running Our Mouths podcast. We want to thank you guys for listening once again, and we'll catch you all next week.